a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12 Pack Radio. Get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12 Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news in the home, the Better in College Football Statistical Model. I'm Bryant. He's Rob. We are here on week 9 to preview all the games in the Pac-12 Conference of Champions and then look back at week 8. Our apologies for being out last week. I think we mentioned it on the podcast, but we didn't mention it over Twitter. I was out on vacation. Rob was holding down the fort and just and really just watching UCLA stomp all over Stanford for all of you. Unfortunately, YouTube TV does not work on international Wi-Fi, so I wasn't able to watch last week's games, but I did check the box scores, and I'm looking forward to the games coming up this week. I was also able to watch most of the games the previous week on I was telling Rob before we were recording, YouTube TV not available. Any of the American streaming companies not available in London. And so I'm actually watching the only thing that was available was they would play the game if you put your mouse over the preview, like little slides on each square of YouTube TV. So if you can imagine this, it's me at 3 a.m, like screaming at the television when there's no sound, because with like an enlarged, you know, like just zooming in, like I'm like it's the Zubruda film. I'm trying to find the bullet and stuff. Anyway, it was fun. The games were exciting, and we're here to talk about them. Rob, you were able, I cracked the box scores open. I did as much as I could and to kind of figure out what happened last week. But what were your general impressions of somebody who actually watched the games?
I mean, I think I have two big takeaways from this last week. One of which is, of course, like USC is eliminated from I think there's a very reasonable argument they were eliminated by getting absolutely whomped by Notre Dame. And yeah, they were going to have to absolutely win out in fairly impressive fashion against the remainder of their schedule, I think, to have a shot at the playoff this year. Although maybe Michigan opened things up a bit, but that said, losing to Utah, I mean, losing to Utah without Cam Rising, I mean, just, I mean, a profound, I mean, among a host of other, you know, starters out as well. I'm just profoundly embarrassing for USC. I mean, I think to be where they are now in year two of Lincoln Riley's tenure is not where people were. I mean, it's easy to say, like, not where people were expecting. But I think more than that, I mean, it just showed, like, I mean, they seem like a team that has a lot more problems than they even had last year. I mean, offensively, they've taken a step back from where they were last year. They seem highly dependent on Williams. And the defense has taken the tiniest of small steps forward. And it's about equal to, say, the step forward the Washington defense made or the step forward the Oregon defense made. The problem is both those defenses were better last year. And so USC's defense is still in the 70s. They're a really, really bad Power 5 defense. They needed to make a much bigger step forward this season. And it's a bummer because it's like wasting Caleb Williams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, how many times? So the only game I was able to watch last week was the end of the Utah-USC game. I caught the last fourth quarter as we landed. So I'm watching it as my dad's driving us home. I the thing that's interesting to me is that we have talked multiple times about, I mean, like last year, or was it 2 years ago when Caleb Williams, it was last year, the ASU game, Caleb Williams won that game for USC. If Caleb Williams wasn't in the game, ASU beats USC at the Coliseum. Like it was a Caleb Williams run around and pull plays out of a hat in order to win that game for USC. And we were kind of saying, you know, hey, there's a lot of this going on, and the wide receivers this year aren't as good as last year. No. And the line, I think it's a combination of two things where I don't think their line is very good. I mean, obviously it's not, but that was one of the question marks for us. But I think some of the defensive lines they've come up against this year really challenged Williams. Like, I watched the full Notre Dame USC game in London on the thumbnail, and then I watched, and you could just tell when he's under duress, it's easier when you have better wide receivers that are open that you can throw to. And in this case, like, the pressure is immense against him, and he just has melted down the last two games to a point where, like, I mean, I'm hearing national podcasts and national coverage that have, like, people that legitimately, these aren't like, you know, the Fox Sports podcast that's covering college football. These are like straight up hardcore fans that are basically saying, I don't know about Williams as a first round pick anymore because under pressure, like, you know, what's he going to look like in the NFL? Now, I think that he'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just kind of a difficult situation for him. But if Caleb Williams isn't on this USC team,
oh,
how many games did they actually win? I mean, because like Miller Moss is a mess, and that the offense kind of sucks without Williams, like for sure sucks without Williams. And the running game has kind of been it's not bad. Like it's been a hit or miss, but it's not like you could rely on the running game that, you know, solely like Utah does.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, solely is an understatement. No, I mean, like without Caleb Williams, Caleb Williams kept him in the Arizona game. Like that sounds like a weird thing to say, and yet we live in this world where, you know, USC struggled offensively against Arizona, you know, and then they had a horrible game against the Notre Dame team that had a good game plan. And look, I mean, Utah absolutely made them work for it, right? I mean, you just got a really good defense, and they had a better, I mean, like they, without the turnovers, it was a better game for them, I think, than they had against Notre Dame. But still, just I think people are underestimating how, and maybe look, if you're a USC fan, like you've had some years that have been disappointing, and yet for the most part, like the Pac-12 hasn't been overwhelming. You're about to go into a world where like Ohio State exists, right? Like, I mean, you know, Michigan may be in some trouble, but like, I mean, there are at least three programs. Now the rest of the Big Ten is not good, but there are three programs in the Big Ten that absolutely care. And you're bringing along an Oregon and Washington program that all of a sudden like look like they've got it kind of figured out. And UCLA made a far better defensive coordinator hire than you did. Let's be honest, without Caleb Williams, they may even lose to Colorado. I mean,
that's what I was going to say. Or like that ASU game, right?
Right.
Like the ASU game was close too. Holy smokes. Right. Like, and we saw what we have seen, the Miller Moss experiment. Like, and it is bad, and it is, and good for him for getting a USC degree and going on and doing big things. But,
they've got to be hoping that star freshman that they recruited in that's sitting behind Miller Moss is ready to go next season. But just to have like completely wasted Caleb Williams like this. I mean, yeah, he won the Heisman and he was fantastic and he's been great at times this year, maybe even better considering the surrounding cast. But it's shocking to me that they find themselves in this place.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, you know, other results here, you know, Oregon beats Washington State, Washington beats Arizona State.
That's my other takeaway loosely. Is Washington came way back to earth. Way.
What was that? Like I woke up and looked at the box score and went, what the heck is this? Like and that line was like 25 or 20. I mean, it was a big line.
Yeah.
Washington, for all intent, like I read all the stories on this. Like I saw the clips of the holding call and the pick six afterwards. Like, They probably should have lost this game. What happened?
Yeah, they probably should have lost this game. Look, ASU and Brian Ward is their defensive coordinator, came from Washington State. We thought that was a good hire when they made it. He came in with a great game plan, but it was totally like what Arizona had done, which I thought they had done well, and Arizona didn't have the bodies on the defensive line to really pull off, was Arizona had just dropped in the coverage. And basically, Penix took a lot of underneath stuff in that game. ASU came in and relentlessly blitzed Penix. Just relentlessly blitzed him. And relied on their corners to, be able to cover, you know, for long enough to, put him under duress. And Washington's offense folded. I mean, look, I mean, there's going to be some Washington fans that are going to take umbrage at that, but your offense freaking sucked in this game. Like, you did not put up an offensive touchdown. I don't want to hear any defenses of what happened. Like, you guys were awful against ASU's defense. I mean, and look, ASU's defense, this is a standout performance. I think it's a real signature, you know, performance from Ward and his guys. And they should feel really proud of how they came in and played. But they had to, I mean, Washington very much had to rely on, and yeah, there was some holding in the first half too, but it felt very much like Washington was getting a little home cooking, let's not take out the playoff contender from the Pac-12 refs. Cause there were a couple, even before that missed holding call on the flag they picked up, which was bananas. even before that, there were a couple other fairly egregious Washington holds or interference on ASU receivers that didn't get called. And it's not that ASU has some amazing, I mean, like Washington's defense isn't that good either. They're in the 40s right now in beta rank, but ASU's offense, like, definitely had enough opportunities to potentially put this game away and didn't. I mean, we've talked about, like, the, you know, the kudos to ASU. They've continued to play hard throughout this. Like, I think that's a really good sign for what may be to come. Offensively, they have a big journey ahead of them, I think, still. Defensively, I think Ward's made a huge difference right off the bat. But, like, the big takeaway is, like, man, Washington is entirely reliant on that offense. And they looked really vulnerable. I mean, really vulnerable, right? I mean, like, if you took away the tape of what Arizona did and what ASU have done to Washington, if you have the guys, and I mean, maybe, you know, there's not a ton of folks that do, but, like, I mean, Utah could be a really, really miserable game for Michael Penix. Like, after if Morgan Scali turns on the ASU tape and the Arizona tape, even with Lander Barton out now for Utah for the season, Utah's got the guys with, like, Ellis and company to make that a miserable, miserable game for Washington.
Yeah. I asked on Twitter, you know, Hey everyone, what happened in that game? And to their credit, a bunch of Washington fans were like, yeah, that sucked. That was pretty bad. And the thing that worries me is, well, and I have two questions. The big worry is if ASU's blitzing and is getting home, right? Like, Washington's recruited fairly well on the offensive line for multiple years. Yeah. That worries me because, right, they're going to come up against, like you mentioned, they're going to come up against Utah. They're going to come up against some fronts that are going to be able to get home and really make Penix run around. I guess the other question is, were they playing their starters in the beginning? Were they kind of keeping this, you know, one of the things that worry me about some of these games, like when you're playing Cal, or, I mean, this is kind of the first year where the conference has multiple playoff contenders that are, like, legit in the hunt. So I was wondering, like, it's funny because I woke up, I looked at the score and I went, oh yeah, another you know, desert dog game. And I'm like, oh no, that was at home. So were they playing a lot of young guys?
They got cut. I mean, like, ASU, look, offensively, ASU did not have, I mean, ASU has some limitations offensively for sure. But, like, Washington's offense just got cooked by Ward in this game. And look, I mean, like I said, like, there's plenty of opportunity. Like, I mean, I don't, like, this Washington offense is obviously going to bounce back and everything like that. But, like, it's a funny one. Like, Oregon and Arizona's defensive ratings fell by a non-trivial amount, even though, like, you know, like, Oregon had a pretty decent game against Washington state-wise. What hurt him was that, like, Washington all of a sudden really fell back, right? Like, Washington's offense really fell back from where they were. I mean, this is, like, this puts Washington in the range, and they do have an opportunity, I think, to improve over the rest of the season. But, like, I mean, where they could, and look, there's no juggernauts in college football this season, but, like,
yeah,
like, you don't, if you're Washington, you don't want to go up against Ohio State's defense. Like,
no, not at all.
Right. Like, you don't want to go up against a real, I mean, like, you just got this done to you by ASU's defense, which is like the 20s, right? Like, you know, like, you don't want to go up against, like, I mean, you're going to get it with Utah. You know, like, you don't want to go up against one of these, because, like, I mean, like, maybe Penix doesn't have two interceptions, you know, that really hurt you, but, like, they looked really vulnerable, as if teams had, like, been able to put, like, with the time, with the tape, had been able to put together a good game plan for them, which, you know, it didn't look like. And again, like, they still put up points and they still won that Arizona game, but it didn't look like until that Arizona game anybody had figured out how to slow them down. And they went out they had a really good outing against Oregon, but, like, whew, buddy, like, if I guarantee you, defensive coordinators across the conference, like, Washington better have some answers to that, because, like, it's not just, like, that they went after Penix and blitzed him. It's that, like, the hot routes weren't open. They weren't finding guys, like, you know, like, you know, ASU said, like, you're not going to beat us deep because you're not going to have the time, and it worked.
All right, well, that's something we're going to have to keep an eye out for, because, like, after Washington beat Oregon, and again, like, I watched that game on the thumbnail, but I watched the whole game, and that game was so awesome. Like, I was so excited about that game. You know, you had the fourth and goals and a lot of big stops, and the defense really stepped up and on both sides. It's just a great game. And then you open this, and you're like, oh, Buzz's girlfriend, woof! Like, yeah. When I saw that box score, I was just so disgusted.
It was almost inconceivable. Like, because I'd flipped over after, like, I'd been mostly, like, I had it on, but I'd been mostly watching Utah, USC. And I like kind of like looked over and I was like, wait a minute. Like, what?
Well, and I'm glad we talked about this because we killed USC, right? For doing the same thing against ASU. So, and look, that's a testament to ASU.
Yeah.
And you know, we aren't paying as much attention. Yeah. I mean, and think of all, like, they barely have an offensive line. They're starting a former walk-on quarterback that was like the pajama ball hero of the world. Like, and who by the way is like still a good quarterback but doesn't have the physical tools. So Dillingham, like, I'm really impressed with what Dillingham has put together in his first year. It's been overshadowed by what Colorado's doing, obviously, because of all the attention. But that's two big games in a row where they've really been able to hold the line, and they took it to Colorado, you know, and almost won that game. It was a good they beat Colorado. Colorado won it because of the watch thing. But all, like, ASU is a team where, like, they are not to be effed with. Like, if you go into that game, you
better have a good offensive game plan. Like, you, because, like, that defense, like, I mean, Ward's good. Like, that's, like, that is the only takeaway that anyone should have from, like, this ASU team right now is, like, the offense is a work in progress, but, like, that defense is going to fight you tooth and nail.
Yeah. Well, that's fun to have a team like that. Yeah. It's a little scrappy and able to really mix it up with people. All right, let's get to all the games in week 9, and let's do it right after this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're talking Week 9, Pac-12 football, and I mean, obviously the game day, you know, game days and probably whatever Fox's game day thing, they're all going to be at Utah. They're all at Salt Lake City. God bless them.
It's a light week for college football in general. Like, this is clearly the best game. even with Cam rising out, you're like, oh, okay, fine.
All attention on Bryson Barnes. And taking one for the team, just running into the USC defense here. Let's get to that one a little bit later because we can. I want to start at the 1 o'clock game on Pac-12 Network. Number 24, get out of my face, all these voters. Number 24, USC goes on the road to face the Cal Bears. USC is an 11-point favorite on the road. It's opened at 10. It's moved up one. Money following USC here. I mean, we talked a little bit about, obviously, the game that they had against USC. I just, one of the things to keep in mind, if you didn't watch this game, right, like, there was 14 points scored on USC side. That was special teams and a pick six. So, I mean, like, that's like 18 points of offense against Utah, as long as my math is okay. But that's pretty rough. And it's a testament to Utah's defense. But I mean, Caleb Williams, 256 yards, no touchdowns. The thing that was interesting,
7.5 per, I mean, like, they didn't get the ball down the field.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Taj Washington was the highest pass catcher in that game. It's just, I think that if that's the case, like, which is kind of bizarre to, like, say that. It's almost like I'm digging for a stat, but, like, you don't want Taj Washington to be your top receiver, like, in any game. You want him to have, like, four catches for, like, 80, and that's a pretty good game for him, right? So that basically means that Singer didn't do anything, Rice didn't do anything, Williams didn't do anything, and that's a problem. I did appreciate Zachary.
Might have, like, the fourth or fifth best receiver room in the conference. Like, these guys are not getting it done and getting open.
Arizona's better.
Washington
is better.
Oregon.
Oregon. I mean, Oregon has, what's his face? They have like one guy, right?
Which the is other guy? Like, who's USC guy?
Fair, all right. Fair,
I mean,
fair.
Like, that's a, if USC had a guy, like some of these other guys would be more dangerous.
So is Colorado's core better than USC's? Ooh,
with Travis Hunter? I would take Colorado's guys. I would.
Remember in the preseason we were dumping on like the Colorado homers for saying that the wide receiver. All right, guys, like, you win that one. Okay, yeah, I think you're right, which is so crazy when you take a look at who's on. I think we've all like seen the Brendan Rice show and been like, yeah, I mean, like, he's fine. When he came over from Colorado, he came in with a lot of hype as a transfer, but I didn't see it on the field, and he has the tools, but
he's really physically really talented and quite fast, and somehow disappear. Like, all these guys just disappear in games.
The Dorian Singer one is the one that really surprised me. I know. He's good. I'm just like, what on earth is going on? I think I tweeted about this. Like, when USC was playing Arizona, like, I bet on Arizona. I thought Arizona was going to, like, you know, definitely cover the spread. But I would have bet a hefty amount more if I knew that Caleb Williams was out there like LARPing as like a Falconeer. Like, if you see all these, clips of him like during game week, and he's like at the Oregon Zoo promoting whatever they're doing at a Habitat for Humanity, which is good. Like, good for him for doing like the nonprofit work, but it just, he's on the Wendy's commercials, and I'm like, that's a lot for somebody that's playing college football. Yeah. It just seems like it's bizarre to me that. And look, if I were him, I'd do the same thing.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'll go to the zoo, man. I'll see some Falcons. That's awesome. But it just strikes me as like, this offense is off.
Yeah.
And he's had a couple bad weeks in a row. And yeah. I don't know. Like, anything else to mention? I mean, you take a look over at what Utah did to him. I mean, like, Bryson Barnes, really, like, the highlight plays were him running.
Yeah.
He did have three touchdown passes, though. And Sione Vaki, like, we need to talk about him.
Yeah.
Right? They bring out a safety, right? Right. Throw him in the backfield, and all of a sudden it's like the most Utah thing ever, right?
Right.
Like, oh, well, we just bring another safety in, and he's going to be awesome. Although, like, you know, Vaki was just the truth in terms of that he had this, that one of those moves where he just stops on a dime, and like the USC, which USC tacklers fall over everybody all the time anyway, but it was more pronounced when Vaki was catching the ball. Anything about the defense? I mean, obviously we've dumped on it forever, but, you know, 34 to Utah, with a backup quarterback, like, why have we not fired Alex Grinch yet?
I know.
I'm
confused. No, I mean, so like, I'm trying to remember the guy that's the former Oregon player's name. Like, he was commenting on like, USC couldn't set the edge all game defensively. And their defensive line, particularly with Bear Alexander not out there, was like really small and just got pushed around. And this isn't like a vintage Utah offensive line. They're okay. And like, I believe, I'm trying to remember, like, now I got to remember when Bear Alexander got ejected.
Because it was at the very end. It was like in the last 3 minutes.
Oh, it was?
Game. Yeah.
Oh, well, then, yeah. Well, it didn't matter when he was out there either, if they were setting the edge. But, like, it's a big problem. I mean, like, and then he's going to miss, like, the first half of this Cal game, too. This USC defense, I mean, we talked about it. They're a real problem, right? I mean, and they're currently, you know, like, sitting at 77 overall in beta rank.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
I guess, like, one thing in Bear Alexander's defense, so he had two massive penalties here. The last one,
oh,
where that was like, that was bad call. Like, it just was.
That was a ridiculous call.
Yeah. I appreciate it. I was laughing out loud just because it was so dumb. And I'm like, Utah's going to get somehow or some way, they're going to get into field goal position. And they did with that Barnes run. But yeah, that was a bad call. If you're a USC fan, wanted to make sure you knew that we did see that. It was bad. But you got to stop the backup quarterback. That's a former walk-on son of a pig farmer. God bless him. So they play, they face Cal. Yeah. Do we know what Cal is yet? I mean, they're not good.
No.
I know that. What do we got here?
So Cal right now says it's 60 overall in beta rank. And they're really struggling defensively. They're at 82 overall in beta rank right now, and they're at 106 in effective pass. They're at 65 in effective rush, but that 106 in effective pass is a real problem, particularly against the USC team that currently is at 25 overall. They're at number 8 offensively in beta rank, which is a step back from where they were last year, but they're at number 4 in effective pass. Right now, this USC defense is at 77 overall. Now, Cal's offense with the new offensive coordinator has actually kind of started to put it together. They're at 34 overall in beta rank. They're at 17 overall in effective rush versus 67 in effective pass. Like, they can run the ball pretty well. I think that's going to make this for a little bit of an interesting game. I feel like this is definitely a get right game for Caleb Williams in the offense, getting to go against a Cal defense that is really struggling, right? But the flip around, I mean, the flip side of it is, of course, is like this Cal team is all of a sudden like they've got to be pretty excited about facing this UCLA defense, or I mean, this USC defense.
Yeah. My only worry here, it's interesting, right? Because like Fernando Mendoza is the quarterback here for Cal. They are going to be able to do some stuff on the ground, but I mean, how much, right? Like I know USC's defense is bad, but when the threat through the air, I mean, like Mendoza is Mendoza. Right. Like who knows what you can do against this USC defense, but like, I mean, he's not going to have more than 300 yards, maybe 250 max, right? And maybe like a 2 touchdowns and a pick is probably the best. Like, that's the best game I think he can do against USC, right? And that's not good enough. Like, I think you need a quarterback. Utah's a little bit different because their defense is so good. I think if you have a bad defense, you need somebody that can throw the ball. I don't know if Cal's going to be able to do this and keep up. Like, my worry is that like USC quits, that which is a distinct possibility, and there's no better place to quit than in Berkeley, right? Where like it's sleepy, nobody's there, and you're just like, I don't even care anymore. I don't know, what do you think?
They put up 40 on Oregon State, you know. This Cal offense, now they're not good. Like, I mean, they're middle of the Power Five. That's a significant improvement from where they've been. So it opened at 10, right? I mean, I think USC is going to be able to put up a lot of points here. I think Cal in particular, their struggles to defend the pass are a massive problem in this game. And I think they're going to give up a lot of points to this USC team. And that's where it's like, it starts to wonder, like, does Cal get discouraged? Does Mendoza have a pick? I think they are going to be able to run the ball, and I think they're going to put up some points. But I do think this game is one of those ones that like, it could be that like that Oregon State game with Cal, where Oregon State like puts up a ton of points on them, and then Cal just is like kind of also like scoring some points, but not as often in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take USC. I think that I set the line at 10, and it was 10 when it opened. I'm like, oh, yeah, good for me. But even though it passed that key number, I just think, I don't know if USC is on full quit watch yet. And I think that this is a game where they get all their frustration out, because we've seen what they can do when they play bad secondary. We saw what they did against Stanford. Now, Stanford is in its own league in terms of how bad that secondary is. But I just think that, like, as much as we've dumped on the wide receivers, this is still a good offense. And I just don't know if Cal have the horses. I'll take USC. I think that they're going to be able to take care of business here. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Trojans too. I mean, I think that Cal secondary is a real problem.
Okay. All right. Next game, 4 o'clock p.m. on Fox Sports 1. Number 5, Washington goes into play Stanford. They go into that sleepy farm. Does Washington still have that Stanford problem? I don't think the answer is yes. I think this is a totally different Stanford team. Washington comes in as a 26.5-point favorite on the road at Stanford. Look, we talked a lot about what Washington was able to do against USC, you know, or against, I'm sorry, ASU. Anything else you want to mention in that game before we just break down what they can do against Stanford?
No, I mean, I think we covered like the important parts of that game in depth.
So how bad is Stanford?
They are pretty darn bad. I mean, this Stanford team's at 99 overall on beta rank. They're at 121 on defense. I mean, that's the real thing. Is like, I mean, UCLA just walloped them. The only good game they've had defensively, really, you can make an argument, is like that game against Arizona. They're at 114 in effective pass, 118 in effective rush. They're they're going to give up a lot of points. This Washington offense is number 6 overall, number 1 in effective pass. And Stanford's offense is also bad, number 94 overall in beta rank. They are really struggling with both the run and the pass, 85 in effective rush, 75 in effective pass. They get a Washington defense that's 40 overall in beta rank, 49 in effective rush, 41 in effective pass. I mean, this is not going to be a fun day for Stanford.
No, the 26.5 is a good line. I think I set it at 25 or 20. No, I actually did 21. That was one of the lines where I was off. And it popped. I think it went from 25 to 26.5 already. So the money has jumped on Stanford. I get why. I'm sorry. The money's coming in on Washington. And I get why, because Stanford stinks. And this is an opportunity for Washington to kind of get their act together. My worry here, again, though, is taking the foot off the gas. Like when I see spreads this big against some really sleepy teams and sleepy games, that worries me a little bit. Stanford should win this game by 40 points, but is there any indication that you have like that they won't step on the gas? Because if you take a look at the numbers, I mean, they should be able to do whatever they want outside running. Like Washington has had a real problem running the ball. And I guess like I wasn't as worried when their starting running back went out with an ACL tear at the beginning of a spring ball. I'm like, oh, whatever. They got like 4 guys behind him. They have nobody behind him, which is super surprising to me. The fact that they can't run the ball. But I don't think it matters that much. I just saw with my own eyes what Caleb Williams could do to the secondary. Right. And now you have Michael Penix and 3 better wide receivers. Right. It seems weird to me, but I want to take Washington because this could be like a 50-0 game or 50-7 or 50-10.
I mean, you're not wrong in that like you could have a little bit of like a take your foot off the gas effect here. But I do think like Stanford just seems to be totally lost. I mean, look, Washington, part of what made that UCLA game so bad is like UCLA's defense is really good and they absolutely put the screws down on Stanford and Stanford could do nothing. Right. And so UCLA's bad offense had great field position all freaking game. Right. Like, and they had Stanford's defense in front of them to be able to put up points. I think this Washington, I don't think their defense is anything like UCLA's defense, but their offense is much better. Now, if you're Washington, do you keep the guys in a little longer if it gets big? I mean, if you're up 3 scores at halftime, right? Like, how much does Penix play? Do you want to get the bad taste from ASU out of your mouth, right? Like, I mean, because they should roll Stanford pretty quick. I would think, given Stanford's defensive problems. Now that said, like Stanford's had some trouble, but like their secondary guys can still cover. Even though like they don't have a pass rush. But I don't think that's going to help them here. Like, I think they're going to be in some trouble. Like I like Washington in this game.
I think the better, I'm going to take Washington too. I think the better move is to take Washington in the first half and you might have to pay up for it. Like it might be 17 or something, you know, in the first half, but I mean, as much as I want to see the Dylan Morris show right in the second half, I don't want to put money on the Dylan Morris show. So I think the first half line is probably the move here, but I will lay the points. I'll take Washington along with you. Knowing right now, like if I do this, if I actually bet it again, it'll be first half. Like I don't think I'm going to put money on this for a full game. Knowing that I'm just a little worried about that back half where they take the foot off the gas, put in the, and say, but I do think like if they hadn't, if they hadn't been so crappy against ASU, I think this is a game where, like, maybe they can, maybe Stanford can cover, but I'll take the dogs. Let's go to the next game here. We have 4:30 p.m. on ABC. National game. Colorado, the Colorado show goes on the road once again, playing number 23 UCLA. So UCLA still ranked after just whooping up on Stanford. Colorado comes in as a 17-point underdog on the road at UCLA. I don't think it's enough. I was furious with Chip Kelly for leaving Dante Moore in the game. Like Dante Moore stinks. Yeah. He does. He'll be better later, but he stinks. And the fact that he actually put Garbers in this game against Stanford gives me a little bit more hope. The fact that, they'll actually be able to move the football. This defense is really good. And I know Colorado can move the football, but against a good defense, I'm curious to see how many points they actually put on the board. Meanwhile, you flip it around and UCLA is going to run all the F over Colorado. Oh. I just, I'm curious.
What this is such a bad matchup for Colorado. Like, so UCLA is at 13 overall in Beta Rank. Colorado is at 78. UCLA's offense is at 31 overall. They're at 11 in effective rush versus 65 in effective pass, and still not great at throwing the football. But this Colorado defense is at 113 overall. They're at 123 in effective rush. Like, this is a that side of the ball is a really bad matchup. But then you flip it, like, Colorado is 49 overall in Beta Rank on offense, 21 in effective pass. But they get a UCLA defense that is good against the run and the pass. They're at number 2 overall in Beta Rank, just behind Ohio State. Number 4 in effective rush, number 4 in effective pass. Like, this is a really bad matchup for Colorado. it was at 15. Beta Rank's naive spread is at 24, almost 25. You know, like, I think this could be a really long day for Shedeur Sanders
on the road too. I mean, like, it's not like the Rose Bowl is this, you know, maniac.
No, they've taken out now. Some of this is like maybe Colorado fans who are coming in, but they've taken some of the tarps off of the Rose Bowl to raise the capacity because like people are buying tickets.
Well, that's interesting. There's going to be a lot of quiet Colorado fans because there's nothing worse than your team getting run over and over and over and over the entire game and you not being able to do anything about it. I think that's what happens here. 17's a lot. It opened at 15. So it's popped towards a key number in terms of 17. I'm gonna lay them. I think UCLA just smokes Colorado and gets some of their frustrations out. The one thing that I'm a little worried about is Garbers. Like, just, you know, how many picks does he throw in this game? It's gonna be at least one. Yeah. So, but like, I'm not as worried about it because I do think that the defense really puts the screws here against Colorado and they score like 17 points in the game.
Yeah, I think this is gonna be, I mean, much like the Utah game later on, this is gonna be a really long day for Sanders. The quarterback, not the DB, maybe the DB too. you might be having to come up and run support a lot. But yeah, I mean, like Colorado, I mean, if you are UCLA, if you throw the ball more than like 15 times in this game, you're an idiot. Like, you are, like, just run the ball right down their throat.
All right. We're going to get to all the other games, including the game of the week. And we're going to do it right after this. All right, we're back. Back half of week 9. We're going to go into, we talked about ASU. We're really excited about this game. Washington State goes on the road. They're a 6.5-point favorite in Tempe against Arizona State. Washington State, one of the games we didn't talk about, Rob, was their performance against Oregon. Washington State came out kind of on fire. They really took control of the game. Oregon came back over time to be able to close this out. I didn't get eyes on this game as much as like at all, actually, like I mentioned before. I'm curious if you had any impressions on what happened there and what you can project going into this game against ASU.
Yeah, I mean, I think this, Washington State had a pretty good game against Oregon, like in the first couple of sequences. And after that, like it really went downhill for them. Look, I mean, Cam Ward threw for a lot of yards. He had 9.1 per, but I would also say for like large stretches of the game, he looked ineffective and like they couldn't sustain drives. They couldn't keep things going. Oregon found ways to get off the field and they ran for a lot of yards against them. I do think Ward showed some improvement, particularly over what we've seen like the past couple weeks. Like, he didn't look as bad, certainly as he did against Arizona or UCLA, but still a pretty rough outing. And of course they have no run game at all. So, I mean, Oregon was able to really take control and like the run defense was really the real, I think, significant problem here for Washington State. I mean, Oregon was able to just absolutely grind them.
Huh. So it could be the Cam Scadabo, like, you know, extreme experience against them coming up. Here's the thing. I saw, like, this was the one line where I was just way off on. I had this at 12 for Washington State. But they go up against like a decent ASU defense, and now I'm starting to understand like why the line opened so low. I think it started at 5. It's moved up to 6.5. I still believe in this Washington State team, but not as much as I did. I think one of the things that's interesting to me was like their wide receivers are legitimately good. And we saw what ASU was able to do against Washington. Can we project that into this game? Like, is that a one-off? Because that's just, I mean, because on paper, like if I hadn't seen the box score, that, right, we don't want to overreact to the game before, right? This is like a one game sample out of many. I just feel like Washington State should be able to move this football at least through the air. They won't be able to do it on the ground. Yeah. But I don't know, like, what are ASU's defensive numbers?
So ASU's defense is really interesting, and like maybe this makes it an even better matchup for them. So Washington State's offense is at 37 overall in beta rank. They're at 13 in effective pass. This ASU defense is at 22 overall in beta rank. They're at 14 in effective rush. 14 in effective pass. 41 in effective rush. That doesn't help you very much if you're Washington State. But 14 in effective pass. They do a pretty good job shutting down the passing game. Now, ASU has some problems in here. They're at 126 overall in special teams. They're at 107 on offense in beta rank, and they're at 120 in effective rush versus 91 in effective pass. They're really that offensive line, even though you like Scadabo, like they struggle to run the football because the offensive line simply isn't good. Washington State's defense has taken a step back. They're at 63 overall in beta rank. And really, after getting mauled on the ground by both Arizona and Oregon, they're at 82 in effective rush versus 39 in effective pass. I mean, the reason the line started out low is likely because of ASU's defense, and that is a pretty good matchup for them. I do like Washington State by about 6.5. In this game, that feels about right. You know, like it's just because I do think this ASU just made Michael Penix's life miserable. And I mean, I think they could do very much the same to Cam Ward. I just don't think they have the horses on offense.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Like if they had an offensive line, I thought that this was going to be like a gimme. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, 6.5, whatever, I'll take that. I'm a little nervous about it, but I'll take Washington State too. That was a big game for ASU, and now they got to come home against like a team that is still decent. Like this isn't Colorado. This is a team that I think if they played Colorado, would be like a 14-point favorite. I just think that there's enough there on offense to be able to get this done. I'm going to be fascinated to see how many yards ASU is able to get on the ground. I don't trust Bourquet. I like their wide receivers. I like their tight ends, but I think this is a one-dimensional offense. If they had a better quarterback and like a few more offensive linemen, I'd be much more interested in ASU. But I'll take the Cougs also. We've been taking a lot of favorites here, which, you know, when we first started, I'd kind of be counting up how many favorites versus how many dogs are we taking. Like, and I realize that we're taking a lot of favorites right now, but I just think that the matchups are the matchups and the numbers are the numbers.
Yeah.
Like, you know. All right. So we're both taking Washington State. Let's take this next game, which I'm fascinated about. So this comes on what time does this game pop up? It better not be on. Damn it, it is. 7:30 p.m. Dang it, on ESPN. Number 11 Oregon State is on the road to play Arizona. Oregon State is a 3.5 road favorite against an Arizona team, Rob, that really has started to feel themselves, and rightly so. The offense is clicking. The offensive line is in good shape. Both these teams were on a bye. So I'm fast. This could be a great game. What do the numbers say here in terms of the matchups? Because I think that line is stupid. I think Arizona is a good team, and I don't trust Oregon State's defense.
I think Arizona's a good team too. I mean, Arizona's at 28 overall in beta rank right now. Against the 11 Beavs. So Oregon State comes in at number 10 on offense. And in particular, they're number 7 in effective rush behind the Jim Mihalchak line and with some pretty good running back development. Number 17 overall in effective pass. I mean, DJU is, he's not spectacular, but he's good. He often makes the right throw. He'll make three or four dumb throws a game. He will make three or four throws a game where you're like, wow, that guy looks like an NFL quarterback right there, right? Like he's got a little bit of that in him. Now this Arizona defense is at 43 overall. They have been a little bit susceptible to big plays, 67 overall in explosive drives. Now their run pass split is still affected by having come off and playing Washington and then USC. So they're at 20 overall in effective rush, 84 in effective pass. I do think their pass defense is a lot better than that. And they'll continue to improve it. I'm also less like, I think their run defense is going to kind of come back to earth a little bit, maybe in this game. Now offensively, Arizona is at 24 overall in beta rank. There's still some JDL numbers in here, but with Fifita, one thing to keep an eye on is their drive efficiency, which has been their bugbear. It's been improving significantly. They're up to 68 overall. They were in the 120s when Fifita took over. So this is still a very different offense with him running things. They're at 46 in effective rush versus 24 in effective pass. I think even like there are two things holding, like I think their numbers are a little bit better than this 24 overall because you have the Stanford game in there with JDL, you have the Mississippi State game in there too. This Oregon State defense is at 35 overall. Now they're really good at drive efficiency. Like they're at number 8 overall there. They find ways to get off the field and not give up points. Their offense does put up some points, but they're only at 106 in negative drives, not forcing a lot of three and outs or turnovers. And they have given up some big plays. Number 33 overall in explosive drives. Arizona is 16 offensively in explosive drives. This is a really interesting matchup, right? Like, Beta Rank had this actually as a little bit more of a favorite for Oregon State at about 6 points. I mean, that's still not a ton, I think. But this game, I think we are still figuring out what it looks like with Fifita. Meanwhile, one of our other models has it as just Oregon State by 2.5. This is a genuinely tough one. I think this game is probably closer to a toss-up.
Yeah, I think so too. The thing that really gets me here is Oregon State on the road at Arizona. Like, I think that really matters. Like, there's certain matchups where, like, and we'll talk about this with Utah against Oregon, right? Where you go to certain places and you just go, ah, crap. And Tucson is one of those places when the team is, like, decent. And, I think this Oregon State team is rickety. I'm shocked that they're 11th in the country. I mean, like, I know they're good. They're good.
Their offense is sneaky good. Their offense is sneaky, very effective. Like, they're not, like, they don't wow you at any point with anything that they do. They just do it really well. Like, they have a good scheme. They have good play calling. They have good execution for the most part. There's just not anybody on this team that you're like, that guy is going to get drafted in the first round. There's a bunch of guys who are like, that guy might be he might sign an undrafted free agent contract.
Like, yeah. Which is totally in college football. You take those every time. Right. And they've got a couple of those tiny guys that like, that will,
but I think Arizona can cover. I think Arizona can cover Oregon State's wideouts. And I think this is a Justin Flo game. This is a game where you can put in Justin Flo and just let him play run defense and not worry. you cannot put him in and ask him to like play complex coverage. But
my worry, well, like, so almost to flip that around though, my worry is, I think it's Bolden. I got to go back and look. There's like two tiny, they have like 8 tiny guys on their team. Oregon State does, but there's 2 of them that they use for these like tunnel screens.
Oh yeah.
And no one Arizona's tunnel just going to get caught on the, oh man, the pants are going to be down and they're going to be trying to, you know, like the hand's going to be reaching down to pull them up and they trip on themselves. Like that's going to happen at some point in this game. And it is just, can Arizona score enough points against this defense? I think they can. Like, I think they keep this close. If you're going to give me an extra hook, I will take Arizona. I really do think this team is good. And I just don't trust Oregon State to be good enough to be able to take on a good offense on the road with a loud environment. If this was in Oregon State, I would totally take Oregon State. I think that really home field really matters in this one. I'll take the Cats plus 3.5.
Three and a half is too much. Like it opened at 2. Like I think 3.5 is a little too much. Like I'll take Arizona.
The thing that if Oregon State, this is what I would look out for. If Oregon State is trailing, or if they're winning, like how much are they going to rely on that run, and how good is it? Cause it's good. I know it's good, but like, that's the one like spear that they hit in the grass that they can use, yeah. Right? Just to see how effective that is. Like when Arizona's on a roll or if Oregon State needs to catch up and just really put points on the board. I'm really interested to see that. Well, look,
I mean, like, I don't want to take anything away from Johnny Manson, but I think Dwayne Aquin has made a huge difference on this staff. Both of these teams are coming off byes. I could not be more interested in seeing what Jonathan Smith and Brian Lindgren's game plan is with 2 weeks to plan, and what Arizona with like Dwayne Aquina like is going to do defensively. Cause he had a good game plan for Washington. He had a good game plan for USC. He had a great game plan for Washington State, right? Like,
dude, they smoked Washington State. I mean,
we didn't even have a chance to talk about that because we were on break. They dismantled them. Like,
we didn't even talk about the Colorado.
And we're assuming Fifita's going to play. Like, Jed Fish is being like a little bit coy of like, we've got two good quarterbacks, blah, blah, blah. But like, he has at least stopped saying like, Delora is the starter. So like, we're assuming Fifita keeps playing here. If it's JD, if it's JDL, give me the Beavs. I just want to be clear. If Arizona gets the ball, whenever they get the ball, and JDL runs out there, I have a little asterisk there, and my pick flips to the Beavs.
Absolutely, I totally agree. Especially in a big game like this, Moses, it'd just be a total mess. All right, let's get to the big game here. 12:30 p.m. on Fox, game day. In Salt Lake City, Oregon goes on the road to play the Utes. Oregon is a 7-point favorite on the road. This game is just fascinating to me because Oregon is good, and Oregon is a good team with a decent defense, with a good offense. And Utah doesn't give an F, man. They do not care. And it is so tough to play at Salt Lake City. And we've talked about this we've been covering this conference for multiple years. I didn't give them the credit they deserved when they played UCLA. I just assumed that like Dante Moore didn't stink, and I'm like, whatever. You know, Utah doesn't have like half their players, and man, it doesn't matter. Like Utah has a great defense. They're going to be able to move the ball on the ground. But I'm curious what the matchup is here with the numbers, because basically like Cam Rising ain't coming back, and this team is the team. Like what actually is this team in the numbers compared to Oregon?
This is number 7 in Oregon at 21 Utah. Oregon's offense comes in number 3 overall in Beta Rank. Having a real good year. They're at 10 overall in effective rush, number 6 in effective pass. Now this Utah defense also has some injuries, but they're at number 4 overall in Beta Rank currently. They have been a little bit susceptible to big plays, number 18 overall in explosive drives. They have the number 2 overall defense and effective rush. That I can't wait to see this matchup against this Oregon run game. They're at 13 overall in effective pass. And I think this is going to be another good check on this Utah pass defense. They had a pretty good week last week against a USC offense that I do think has some problems, but still I think has a legitimate passing game. And they did, you know, put Caleb Williams through it a little bit. I'm interested to see this game though, because like I do think Oregon, even though they're not necessarily gonna break a ton of runs, but they're gonna be able to at least rely on the run game a little bit. Flip it around, this is where the Oregon advantage really comes in. So Utah's offense is at 57 overall in Beta Rank. They're at 16 in effective rush. They're at 100 in effective pass. Now, look, I do think with Barnes, they're a little bit better than they were with Nate Johnson. And there's definitely some Nate Johnson data in here. But they get an Oregon defense, which is 25 overall in Beta Rank. And they're at 21 in effective rush versus 38 in effective pass. So they are going to match up fairly well with what Utah is going to want to do. And that's probably a little bit of bad news for this Utah team. Because, like, look, you're going to be able to go and put up points against USC. Like, you can have a get-right game against USC's defense. Everyone will. This Oregon defense isn't spectacular. They're just kind of on the sunny side of, like, middle of the road in the Power 5. But they're better at stopping the run. And that's the one where I do think, like, that could spell a little bit of trouble for this Utah team. You know, BetaRank has it at, I mean, it opened at 6. BetaRank had it at 5.99 in the naive spread. but the predicted score leans more towards Oregon a little bit because of that gap. You know, that Oregon is better at defending the run, and it's higher than that 6 that it opened at. What did it move to? 7. So yeah, I mean, it moved in the direction of, I think that gap is probably where Oregon's run defense is probably a big advantage coming into this. Cause this, like, we talked about, like, this Utah offensive line isn't great either. Like, I mean, look, I mean, I've got some hate mail from Utah fans about, like, not believing in them this season, even though they've gotten to, like,
yeah, have your team is freaking, well, I mean,
come on, man. Like, you also are just getting into the harder part of your schedule a little bit too. So, yeah, but this is going to be, like, this is going to be a really tough matchup for them. Like, this isn't a half a team getting drugged by Caleb Williams. I mean, Oregon is a much more complete team. They're a much more complete offense. And they are certainly, like, at least a respectable defense. And that's where I do think, like, you know, look, they're not UCLA. They're not going to, like, totally shut down Utah. But I do think they're going to slow them down enough that that's a problem. And yeah, even on the road, I mean, like, and Utah is tough at home. I mean, real tough at home, but I like the Ducks.
Yeah. So when I was doing the lines before, I had it at 5, but I actually had it at 10, Oregon by 10. And I'm giving Utah, like, a 5-point home advantage, because they're just the truth there. I mean, they really are excellent. I just, Rob, I don't trust this Oregon team. I don't, like, I just, they're good. I get they're good, but, like, I was not surprised that Washington beat them.
Oh man. But, like, I say this is, like, I mean, not to anger Washington fans more after what I said about them too. Like, but Oregon, I mean, legitimately, Oregon, and I, like, don't bring any post-game win expectancy crap to me. Like, every time I see people put those numbers out, I'm just like, what is this? Like, who came up with this? Like, Oregon, based on the drives that actually took place in the game, should have put up more points than Washington. I mean, really, I mean, like, you know, Dan Lanning kicks a field goal, and I don't mind the aggressiveness, and Oregon wins. It's like, don't get me wrong. Like, I just, like, they're not a complete, like, they're not some amazing, like, juggernaut team. Like, the defense would have to be a lot better. I do trust this offense, and I can't wait to see this offense against this defense. This is one of the best matchups of, like, units in college football this weekend.
Oh, it's going to be so fun. This is going to be a great game. Like, Utah is going to bring, I'm going to take the points. I don't like 7. I understand what I'm doing too with this, right?
I mean, 7, like, is does 7 does feel like a lot, actually. Like, I mean, 7 feels, but
I know. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, but again, like, right, if they were playing this on a neutral field, I would take Oregon.
Yeah.
I think Oregon absolutely covers on a neutral field. I think that the home field just makes this a bigger difference than it should be. And I really do think that defense is going to bring the noise, and really try to make Knicks earn it. And he could, because Troy Franklin is a freaking man. Like, he is awesome.
Well, and I mean, and Knicks was injured last year, you know, when they played, right? I mean, like that, yeah. I mean, you know, like, you have a healthy Knicks. Oregon wins last year.
Yeah, I think 7 is a lot. Like, this is going to be, I think this is a close game, and I think, you know, there is a scenario, obviously, where Oregon wins by 14. Yeah. I don't know if there's a scenario where they win by 20.
No.
Right. No. I think
there's
that
no Utah's scenario where either of these teams win, unless you have, like, 5 turnovers, barring some, like, massive turnover imbalance. This is going to be a close game.
I got to go back and look and see, was Knicks hurt when they played? I know Williams.
Yeah, he got that injury in the he got that injury in the Washington game. Remember on that run? Oh, yeah, like right. So he's kind of limping right. around. That's the one thing that with this game is like, I mean, Knicks can keep it alive. And that could be a problem. But I mean, like the main thing, like, look, I mean, if Oregon can't, I mean, and there's a possibility because Utah's run defense is really good. And but, I mean, maybe even with Barton out. But if Oregon can't run, oh, buddy, this could be a long day. Like, this could just be a real tight game. Like, at which point, like, I mean, like, it's Oregon by three or something, which you guys take the Utes. I think they'll, oh, it's tough to say, because I really do think Utah's run defense is so good. And they are so good and so gap sound, and they have been for two straight years. Oh, God. Like, give me the Utes at home. Like, I can't, it's a night game, right? Like, or is it 3:30?
No, it's a day
oh,
game.
Oh, no,
it's,
no. It's, give yeah, me Oregon then. Eastern. No, no. If the sun is shining, the sun is shining. Like.
I forget what podcast I was listening to, but they were talking basically about like the night games versus the day games and how a game during like the same game played at noon looks like 800% dumber and like less imposing than a game at night when the lights are shining on the helmets and stuff. Like, what is that?
No, no, but if you asked me to like put out a spread for LSU Alabama and it's at LSU, right? And it's a day game in Baton Rouge versus a night game. It's 3 points to LSU if it's a night game. Like, it is.
Oh my gosh. I think you are right to some extent. That would be a really interesting experiment to see like what
time of
what
day?
Is the
yeah,
difference.
That would be a good one.
Yeah. But all right. Well, we're both taking Utah. I think we have the same picks this week. I'm curious to see how
I'm riding
we,
your coattails.
The last time we did this. Yeah, the last time we did this, we did all right. All right. Well, we will return next week. I'm back and on fire. Been doing really well picking against the spread the last couple of weeks. I think the one thing that worries me, we said this before we recorded, was a lot of the lines that I had picked ended up being the lines like very close to what Vegas set, and I'm like, oh no, that means that Vegas is on these teams also. They understand. So with that said, like I think most of these lines are real strong. Yeah. And I don't see a lot of real opportunities here that really jumped out. I had thought that Washington State was that, but like really going through the numbers, that makes more sense where that line is lower than I had anticipated it being. So any last thoughts? Any other games that you're looking forward to nationally you're going to cover on the Saturday pick?
It is a bit of a bummer of a week in a lot of ways on the Saturday six. The big game last week, of course, was that that game again, you know, with the Ohio State and Penn State, right? And that largely lived up to the hype, I would say. But this week, like, it's ugly. I mean, like, Michigan's off. Florida State's got Wake Forest. Ohio State's got Wisconsin. Georgia, Florida. You know, like, just not a bunch of great games. I mean, I'm interested to see Texas against BYU only because Ewers is out for a couple weeks. Maybe Oklahoma, Kansas turns into a fun one, but not a ton of great games. Duke, Louisville is a pretty good one, but yeah, it's,
quarterback's out.
I know it is not a great week.
I mean, but like Arizona is like the second best game on the national.
No, it is legitimately. But like, it's a funny. I mean, it is a funny one though, because like I was talking about like 2 weeks ago. Favorites covered to a huge extent, you know, like, and then last week favorites, like all the dog, like favorites did not cover last week to a huge extent. It'll be interesting to see this week how everyone sort of does.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be back. We'll make sure to cover what happened last week. Look forward to week 10. We are in the heart of Pac-12 football, which means that we have like legit playoff implications coming up. So we're definitely going to keep an eye on that. Stay tuned and we'll catch you next week.